refers to North Korea. It does a profitable trade in exporting arms and missiles and missile parts. They're a major source of income. The revelation of arms and ammunition being sold to Qatar points to something bigger, the sale of missiles to anybody willing to pay. Here's a report.
What on earth does an isolated UN-sanctioned country like North Korea have to do with the wealthy Gulf state of Qatar? Well, Qatar has also been sanctioned by some Arab countries for supporting terrorism, among other sins. But what's odd here is North Korea selling arms to Qatar, when that Gulf state can get the pick of weapons from any corner of the world. In fact, Qatar a few months ago sealed a $12 billion deal for F-15 jet fighters. The clue probably lies in what the North is selling. Since the 1990s, according to an investigation by the Guardian newspaper, the North has focused on the export of missiles and missile parts, conventional warheads, and so on to many Arab countries. The investigation threw up other interesting details. In 2012, 445 North Korean-made graphite cylinders used in ballistic missiles destined for Syria were seized in a South Korean port. In 2009, a chartered jet carrying 35 tons of arms, including surface-to-air missiles heading for Iran, was impounded in Thailand. In 2000, missile parts bound for Libya were seized. In 1996, Swiss police seized a shipment of artillery rockets and Scud missile parts bound for Egypt.
The investigation has established that many of the reported activities did occur and that these were inevitably initiated at my behest. In my interviews with the concerned government officials, I was confronted with the evidence and the findings, and I have voluntarily admitted that much of it is true.
But the meat lay elsewhere. In 2004, Pakistani nuclear scientist Aq Khan confessed to operating a nuclear black market. Khan was not only peddling missile technologies and parts, he had no issues with who his customers were, and North Korea was one of them. In fact, it also turned out that Pakistan and North Korea helped each other circumvent Western sanctions for mutual gain. Bureau Report, we on.
Joining us this evening on Gravitas is a very special guest, Vishnu Prakash, former Indian ambassador to Seoul, also the former official spokesperson of the Ministry of External Affairs in New Delhi. Good evening, Mr. Prakash. Reports of this arms trade network have been around for decades. You know this better than I do. Has America tried to stop this, and how successful has it been?
Well, North Korea is a habitual proliferator, and for decades they have been at it. In fact, the latest reports that we are talking about of the North Korean supply of weapons to UAE, that also dates back to 2015. And according to media reports, even in 2015, the UAE ambassador was summoned by the State Department and a memo was handed over. So that effort on the part of the US is continuing, but the challenge is that North Korea is strapped for funds, and they will do any and everything to proliferate, to generate funds.
I want to understand this better, also for our viewers. Who are these people who run this network? How does the equipment go out? What's the conduit? How much money are we talking about here?
Well, there is no precise figures for the money that is involved. The Air Koryo, which flies at least to Russia and China, can be one conduit. The shipping channels are other conduits, because North Korean vessels have been intercepted with illicit trade, so that has gone on. And whether it is nuclear weapons of mass destruction, whether it's rockets, whether it's armaments, whether there are machine guns, small arms, North Korea has been proliferating weapons and weapons of mass destruction for a very long time. Talking of the Arab world, in the 50s and 60s, they used to be supporting terrorist groups. And then for many decades, they continued the weapon cooperation, military cooperation with countries like Iran, with Libya, with Syria, with Egypt. And in 2015, reports surfaced of the contract between North Korea and UAE. And now, given the situation or the diff between Saudi Arabia and Qatar, this report has resurfaced.
Right. Mr. Prakash, do stay with us. We're talking about how North Korea may play an interesting role in the ongoing Gulf crisis, because suddenly reports of this $100 million arms deal between Pyongyang and Doha have re-emerged on the internet. And this is at a time when the four Gulf nations are trying to isolate Qatar, saying that it is fomenting trouble, terror, and it is giving a safe haven to terrorists and promoting terror outfits. Of course, this is arguable given that among those raising these objections and making these allegations is a country like Saudi Arabia. So that makes it very interesting. Also the fact that, of course, we know that North Korea is selling weapons as much to Saudi Arabia as to Qatar and anyone else. But Pakistan is also an interesting member, if I can say, in this network. Mr. Prakash, after the AQ Khan story came out, do you believe that some rogue Pakistani agents might also be involved in this trade that has gone on for very long now?
Well, anything is possible. I have not seen any credible reports to that effect, but we all know that the missile technology was proliferated from North Korea to Pakistan, and nuclear technology were proliferated from Pakistan to North Korea in the past. They have close ties, and rogue agencies are up to their usual tricks, but in this particular instance, I have not seen any credible report suggesting anything new between Pakistan and North Korea.
Does Washington really have any leverage as it tries to build pressure, and it has been trying for months now on Pyongyang? Can it use its so-called allies like Saudi Arabia and Pakistan to squeeze North Korea, to dry up its source of funds from this arms trade?
Well, Pakistan is hardly an ally of USA.
Not anymore, yes.
And never was. They ran with the hare and hunted with the hound. And as somebody said very recently, that Pakistan has been using USA as an unlimited ATM and has extracted something like $33 billion in so-called assistance for good behavior since 2002. So much for the Pakistan as an ally, non-NATO major ally of the USA. I don't think that USA has much of a leverage over North Korea directly or indirectly. The only country that has some leverage is China. And the Trump administration has been working hard to persuade the Xi Jinping administration to tighten the sanctions on North Korea, but they have not succeeded so far. And it is unlikely, given the present scenario, that China will take any meaningful steps to cause pain in terms of sanctions to North Korea, which really hurt.
North Korea claims to have mastered technology to be able to hit mainland America. How credible are those claims, given the fact that so many countries are paying so much money to buy North Korean technology and equipment?
Well, North Korea has made amazing strides in terms of development of WMD and especially the missile technology. Frankly, the experts have been surprised. And the recent Hwasong 14 missile test, which was conducted earlier in this month, they have tested the first phase of an ICBM. And increasingly, the experts, the strategic community believes that by 2019, if not 2018, North Korea will succeed in developing the ICBM, which will be able to hit the mainland in the USA. And that is the biggest concern of the US or the Trump administration, because they have all been taken by surprise at the pace at which North Korea has been developing its missile technology.
All right, Vishnu Prakash, we leave it at that. Thanks very much for joining us. So what can the U.S. really do to stop North Korea in its tracks and at least to prevent countries like Saudi Arabia and Pakistan from buying weapons from Pyongyang? That remains to be seen. Meanwhile, Donald Trump remains embattled at home, the daily controversies leaving him little time to deal with the global winds of change. Europe is unhappy with him for more reasons than one. The latest trigger is the Russia sanctions. They may hit European business in a big way. And the EU is no pushover, not at least in this form. India has aligned itself perfectly to the changing order. Here's a report.
Another setback for US President Donald Trump. The US House of Representatives has voted overwhelmingly in favor of slapping new sanctions on Russia, Iran, and North Korea. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle came together to pass this legislation, leaving the White House isolated. Russia obviously wasn't too thrilled.
Весьма печальные с точки зрения российско-американских отношений и перспектив их развития, и не менее удручающие с точки зрения международного права и международных торговых отношений.
But why is Trump objecting? Sanctions against Russia were slapped through an executive order in the Obama era. The legislation turns those directives into law. This bill, when signed into law, will take away Trump's powers to lift sanctions against Russia. As more details emerge from the Trump-Russia probe, going against his party's choice now would do more harm than good for Mr. President. But it's not just President Trump who's angry about the Russia sanctions bill. European energy companies could be a casualty of the new law, as the bill allows United States to sanction any company which is involved with Russian energy export. This directly impacts Nord Stream 2, an ambitious natural gas pipeline project between Russia and Germany. And being on the wrong side of the new-look European Union may prove to be costly for America. After French President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Angela Merkel join hands, the EU has found its identity again. Trump's aggressive anti-NATO stance and the pullout from the Paris Climate Accord has united the Union further, powered by a strong social democratic leaning that may side with Russia. The emergence of this new European axis also suits India, evidence of which lies in the moves that Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has made. While he may not have contested the US president publicly, Modi's decision to reaffirm India's commitment to the Paris Accord and his recent visit to France and Germany indicate a shift of poles in a changing world order. And a beleaguered Trump has neither the power nor the bandwidth to change any of this. Bureau Report, WION.
Joining us, Stephen Golub, international affairs expert with us from California. Good evening, Stephen. As one American headline put it, the GOP's effort to tie Trump's hands on Russia looks like it could be very costly. Do you agree?
Yes. If I could just put this in context a bit, this is unprecedented. Imagine if your parliament were tying the hands of Prime Minister Modi to deal with the border problems with China and Bhutan, to deal with Pakistan, to deal with all sorts of major foreign policy issues. Well, we have the equivalent of that here in the US. But it's also important to understand that again, for the sake of context, that our Congress is doing this for good reason. President Trump has continued to deny, despite the findings of all of our intelligence agencies and law enforcement agencies and independent experts, President Trump has continued to deny that Russia meddled with our elections. Because of that, Congress, including overwhelmingly members of his own Republican Party, have decided they just don't have confidence in his ability to manage matters with Russia. So they put in place these new sanctions or solidified existing sanctions. The byproduct for the European Union and for U.S. economic relations with the European Union could be severe, but in the context of what's going on here politically in terms of our foreign policy, it is a kind of very unfortunate byproduct.
The EU has vowed to retaliate within days. What can they do?
Oh, they could slap additional tariffs on. They could impose their own other additional sanctions. It could be retaliation, however, might be a more delayed matter. They could take this, for example, to the World Trade Organization, and that, to settle it or to adjudicate this dispute, could take a matter of months, really, or maybe even longer. That can be a very slow-moving process. So there are all sorts of steps open to them. If I could just add another perspective on this, though, even though I think your lead into this was excellent, the one thing I might differ with a bit is whether there is such absolute unanimity within the EU about this matter. Countries such as Germany in particular, or France, may favor additional gas imports from Russia through an expanded pipeline connection. Countries such as Poland and other countries in Eastern and Central Europe are much more dubious, for historical and understandable reasons, about Europe becoming more reliant on Russia. So I'm not sure there's quite the unanimity there, but nevertheless, there could be some retaliation coming, perhaps very soon, or perhaps as part of a more delayed, deliberate process.
As someone said, America first cannot mean that Europe's interests come last. Vladimir Putin has called it another example of anti-Russia hysteria. Is this more really about putting Donald Trump in his place than acting against Russia?
Yes, yes. Indirectly, it certainly acts against Russia, but it's, as I said, it's a reflection of a real lack of confidence in our president, and an understandable and justified lack of confidence in our president when it comes to dealing with all matters Russia. And I want to emphasize again, this is a thoroughly bipartisan step on the part of our Congress. Massive support for these sanctions by both Democrats and especially Republicans. One other element I might add to this, or thing to take into consideration, is that it's conceivable that there may be a way out of this if, by virtue of a congressional resolution, a statement from the Trump administration, some other formal step to assure Europe that what it's feeling so threatened by, especially in terms of its energy companies' dealings with Russia, might be protected under this. Whether that will turn into a real move, a real initiative, I'm not sure. But I don't know if U.S.-European economic relations are so doomed by this as the way they seem right now. It is a very serious issue, don't get me wrong, but there may be ways of massaging, or informally or very formally, trying to protect European interests, even while the main thrust of the sanctions go forward.
Right. For our viewers outside America, I want to ask you to help us understand, what is it, if anything, that Donald Trump can do about this at this point? And how much money are we talking about when we say that European companies and European governments fear that this is going to be detrimental to their interests?
Oh, boy. Regarding the second question, billions and billions of euros, or dollars, but I don't have an exact figure. I haven't seen an exact figure regarding that. What can Donald Trump do? Theoretically, he can veto this, but it would just be overridden the way our system works by Congress, because we need two-thirds votes to override a presidential veto. We've got basically 98 or 99% of Congress who've already signed on to this legislation. What he practically can do is to sign it and then try to assure the EU through various formal statements, as the EU has requested, that no, there'll be certain matters that won't be included in these sanctions. How well that'll work in practice, I'm not sure, but he could try taking that initiative.
Right. If you look at the larger picture and the messaging here, would you say that this is also the emergence, in a sense, of a new European axis?
Good question. I'm not sure about that. I think the European solidarity on certain issues does exist. It's also rearing its head in terms of the threat of the Trump administration's threat in a completely unrelated matter to impose tariffs on foreign steel imports, including from but not limited to the EU, which would also affect China, for instance. So I don't know whether it's something new. It's a continuation of European solidarity. Again, with the footnote, as I mentioned, that there may still be some divisions within Europe over this particular sanctions matter, because some Central and European some Central and Eastern European nations really distrust Russia and really distrust the notion of the European Union becoming much more reliant on Russian gas imports for all sorts of political and economic reasons.
And I haven't had the chance to see Trump's tweets. Has he responded to what has happened? Is the American Congress, the Senate, the media talking about this, and how?
That's another good question. I haven't seen any tweets on this either. It could be we're not seeing any tweets because he's not yet taking this as personally as he does some other matters. But give it an hour or two or a day or two, we may yet see some tweeting along the lines of Congress tying my hands, not good, sad, something like that.
Well, never a dull day with Donald Trump in office is all I can say. Thanks very much. Thank you for joining us here, Stephen Golub. As always, good to have you on the show. We're taking a break. Still ahead, who is the Al-Qaeda's new chief in Kashmir?